So I'm going to call the meeting to order at 4:02. This is the Ethics Commission in-person meeting with Lynn Cook on the phone. Today is Tuesday, June 1st at 4, now 2 p.m. still. Or is the tape running, Judy?
Yes.
Okay, very good. Let's start with the pledge. We have a flag in the corner. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. So let's talk about quorum. We have a quorum because we have more than five of the commission members here present in the room. Carlton sends his regrets. He's not able to attend the meeting today. And Latonya is on the phone. You probably recall from our last meeting that in order to have a quorum, you have to have at least five people in the room, which we do. And in order for a commission member to participate by telephone to be able to be actively engaged in vote, they have to have some kind of extraordinary circumstances, such as an illness. And so we'll need to consider Latonya's situation and whether or not she can participate fully in this meeting before we get started. So I wonder, Latonya, if you wouldn't mind just giving us a brief summary of what brings you here by phone today.
Sure. I have a previously scheduled vacation that I'm out of town, out of state for. And when the dates were circling around as to the dates to secure for the meetings today, I had indicated that I was unavailable. And so the meeting had to be scheduled on this particular date. But unfortunately, I cannot be physically present with you all.
Thank you.
I move to accept her reason.
Second.
Any further discussion?
Yeah, so you're just making the motion that you'll accept her extraordinary, that's an extraordinary reason.
Okay.
Because she already had her date pre-approved ahead of time.
Okay.
Yeah.
Love is moved and seconded.
Yeah.
Thank you for clarifying. Terry, any additional discussion? All those in favor of acknowledging that Latonya has extraordinary circumstances and should be able to fully participate in the meeting, please say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Welcome to the meeting, Latonya. And since I've said your name multiple times, everybody knows you're here in the room, but let's go ahead and just for the record, go around the room and say who all is here. I'll go first, Ellen Schmidt.
Darcy Gowner.
Ivan Boykin.
Good afternoon, Cherry Pollack, Office of General Counsel.
Sandy Homerkaus, Executive Assistant, Ethics Office.
Andrea Myers, Ethics Office.
Diane Moser, Employee Services.
Mia Hayes, Employee Services.
Carl Moore, Ethics Director.
Eric Freiberger, Ethics Commission.
Mary Blaine Love, Ethics Commission Member.
Joseph Rogan, Ethics Commission.
Jay Davidson, Ethics Commission Member.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. Carla, do you have an ethics thought for us today?
I do. There's a bonus. I have three.
Ooh, three.
I know. I got on a roll. And they're all on kindness. Remember, there's no such thing as a small act of kindness. Every act creates a ripple with no logical end. Scott Adams. Second, human kindness has never weakened the stamina or softened the fiber of a free people. A nation does not have to be cruel to be tough. FDR. Kindness causes misunderstandings, mistrust, and hostility to evaporate. Albert Schweitzer. I don't know why I got on a roll there, but anyhow, I share those with you.
You can all use a little extra dose of kindness, Carla. Thank you. You don't see any members of the public here today. I was going to review the process, which is all invited. Anybody, somebody appears to make a public comment relevant to whatever we're discussing, if we have something substantive to vote on, and then of course open at the end of the meeting for public comments about anything, again, if any public appear. Next up is minutes approval. Has everybody had an opportunity to review the minutes of our such a system, May 10th meeting? Seems like it was just yesterday.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I would entertain a motion regarding the minutes to accept the minutes as submitted.
I move that they be approved as submitted.
Yeah.
I'll second. And further discussion?
I just wanted to say, and I will not take up any time on minutes, but these minutes really, in my view, were not sufficient. They don't indicate, I mean, if you read the Attorney General's has a thing about what should be in minutes, and the IG does too, and they talk about having at least what people's, I mean, at least a point in here, and there's nothing in here of substance. It doesn't even reflect that our prior chair spoke, who came, you know, he was invited and then spoke. That's not even, his name isn't even, he might be here as an attendee, but it doesn't even reflect where he spoke. So I'm happy to go along with it, but I just thought they were insufficient. I don't plan for this to go through over a dissent, so I'm happy to vote if we are going to put them through. I think in the future we should make sure that somebody looking at the minutes gets at least some idea of who took what positions. You know, I think Carlton made some really good points. I thought Imani made some really good points at the last meeting, and I think somebody looking at these minutes would have no idea to even go look at the tape to see what that says.
When you mentioned the prior chair, you mean Mr. Young? When he's
yeah, gone? I didn't.
So he's not even listed on here?
Not unless I missed it, and I will very much apologize if I missed it, but I did not see even the reference that he spoke, let alone anything about what he said.
So,
I think that's a good point, especially since it's been brought up in the past about meeting minutes of this commission not being fully fleshed out.
And that's what got me thinking about it, was just that, they came up with a comment last time, and I remember when I was on the IG selection committee, I had the opportunity to review the IG's policy on sunshine law and how she at least interprets that as applying to men. So again, I've already spent more time discussing that than I intended. So happy to go through, or if the chair defers the minutes, I would be even happier to see that in more detail at the next meeting. But I will vote for them if you call for a vote.
It is okay to defer the minute for either correction or more information. That's nothing new. Commissions and boards do it all the time. So you don't have to vote for it today. You know, it's really up to this. But if Mr. Young spoke, that should definitely be in here in the minutes.
Yeah, and I apologize if I only got these like 3 hours before the meeting, or I would have just suggested changes and sent them back. But I only saw them.
From a parliamentary procedure point of view, do I need to ask Mary if she wants to withdraw her motion, or do we just discuss and vote to table it, or?
Well, you can, ask Mary how does she feel, if you still want to, Who made the motion, Mr. Freiberger? So it's really his motion, if he wants to, it's up to you, Mr. Freiberger. Based on the comments that Mr. Rogan stated and the fact that there are some people who spoke, they're not addressed, so the minutes may be incomplete at this juncture.
Okay,
so
withdraw my motion, and until such time as we can revise them, it's appropriate.
Okay. All right. So the motion has been withdrawn.
And we're back to the minutes. So I guess as the chair, I would say let's defer the discussion of the minutes, any further discussion of the minutes, to the next meeting. Thank you. So on to reports. Carla, do you have a report for the Echo office?
Surprisingly, no, I do not.
What?
I know, it's shocking.
I am shocked.
We're working on a budget if you want a little something.
Thank you.
No report from the Office of General Counsel at this time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Okay. Darcy, do you have a complaints committee report?
I do. We met last week and reviewed the pending complaints and dismissed 8 of them.
8? Very good. Thank you. How many were there?
12, I believe.
Old business, which is our succession planning for the director of the Office of Ethics and Compliance, and obviously Kirby's not here. Kirby has opted to give us some privacy during the beginning part of the meeting since she's being interviewed as a candidate. So are we expecting you to ask her to come?
I'm sorry, what did you say?
I was noting that Kirby has purposefully made herself absent for this portion of the meeting. So while we're waiting for her to get notified that it's okay to come down, I wonder if everybody's had a chance to look at her resume, which was included in your packet, and then some legal opinions that she wrote that I emailed to you earlier. And if not, I'm going to take a peek at those while we wait for Kirby.
Madam Chair, I have a procedural question, if
yes.
I may.
Yes.
I was asking earlier, I saw these questions that are here, and I see at the end that each ethics member will have one question. Is that true?
That is true.
Is there a reason why they only have one as opposed to maybe two or five?
So that was the decision made by the committee. We're going to do a committee report right after Kirby gets here and talk about the process that we're going to follow. So I think I can answer your question better, or JJ can once we get to the committee report. We'll address the process.
Madam Chair.
Yes, ma'am?
There is an option, too, if you want to have the nominating committee give their report now and then have the commission discuss the questions prior to the candidate coming down. I think that she was expecting to come down right at the beginning of her interview.
Okay.
You know, not
during the report.
Yeah.
Okay. JJ, would you like to summarize what we discussed?
Thank you. The committee did meet just prior to this meeting. Ms. Mosher was kind enough to be here with us, and she presented us with a list of questions that she has come up with for the candidate. The committee had an opportunity to review those questions and ask any questions that we had from that. And in addition, we did approve a resolution, and I can read that resolution so that the full committee hears it. But we did approve a resolution to accept those questions. So if you guys would like, I can share that resolution with everyone now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, please read it.
Mm-hmm. All right, this is the resolution of the Ad Hoc Nominating Committee of Jacksonville Ethics Commission. Whereas the Ad Hoc Nominating Committee was authorized by the Ethics Commission to develop interview questions for the internal succession plan candidate, and whereas the Ad Hoc Committee Nominating Committee has worked with the Director of Employee Services to develop interview questions and procedures. Therefore, be it resolved by the Ad Hoc Committee Nominating Committee of the Jacksonville Ethics Commission as follows. The Ad Hoc Nominating Committee recommends the attached list of questions be incorporated with incorporated procedures we utilize in the interview of the internal candidate and will be signed by the Chair of the Committee and noted that it was a unanimous vote. And so the list of questions that we all have is the list of questions that we agreed to utilize. And based on the recommendations of Ms. Mosher, the procedure that we adopted was that each member would ask a question. And it was my understanding that you would ask a question and then you would come back around until the questions run out. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So we would all potentially have more than one question. And then question 14 also gives us the option in mind to ask additional questions if we have questions personally that we want to ask.
Okay, thank you so much.
That's the way it goes. So at this time, by the direction of the Ad Hoc Nominating Committee, I move adoption of the following resolution, the one I just read, that was passed unanimously by our Ad Hoc Committee.
Because it's coming from your committee, it doesn't move the second. It's considered a full motion.
Correct.
Okay. Any further discussion of the resolution? All those in favor of the resolution as reviewed by JJ?
Aye.
Anyone opposed?
Aye.
Thank you. No opposed. Okay, so that passed. Thank you very much.
Madam Chair, and just as a reminder, we all need to fill out this top portion of the questionnaire because we're going to have to turn this over to Employee Services when we're done.
Mm-hmm. And your notes will be public record.
Yeah, I think. Did you want to mention again, Diane, what you spoke to the Ad Hoc Committee about notes and
to the full commission?
Yeah.
I would recommend that the notes be very factual, just be basically like a reminder as to what she said. Although, if you were to decide to consider external candidates, you can always go back and listen to the audio tape, but the notes, you have to think if one of the things you don't want to do is put feelings about a candidate in the note,
in the notes, it should just be based on what they said because it can be public record. And it's not unlikely that it will be requested at some point.
And you mentioned a recommendation about not scoring.
Right. So my recommendation is to not score the internal candidate, but at the end, you either decide that you're going to fully consider her or open it up to the outside. Regardless, we will do a reference check on all the internal candidate. If she's being moved forward, we will do a reference check, and I'll come back and make that report to you. But I do recommend not scoring each individual question, and because if you do go external, we'll have a parallel form for the external candidates. It won't be identical, but it will be a parallel form, and then you would be able to rank her in with the external candidate.
This means you have to ask a follow-up question.
Absolutely.
She's been an employee since 2015. Which references are we going to be checking?
Well, she'll give me a list of references, and hopefully it will include people from prior to 2015. It may include previous board members. It could include current board members. We do ask that it not be just coworkers, but supervisors. And, of course, you can always decide that you do not want to do a reference check if that's the case.
And will the HR department be looking to see if the references that she uses for that she provides to you are different than the references she gave when she came to work for the city?
They can very well be different. They don't have to be the same.
Okay. Thank you.
I just have one question. And she brought that up. Is that the end of the entire process for her once you do the reference check, or is there more that we're not aware of?
We would also look at a social media check, because sometimes people put stuff out on social media that you would need to take into consideration. So that's the other part of the process.
Thank you.
Can I have your name?
Yes, sir.
I'm sorry, Amani just sort of put that in my head. Is, how far back does your reference check go, or do you not have a set?
We don't have a set.
Okay.
And social media, we just like whatever we can find. But if she wanted to give us a reference for someone she worked with 7 years ago, we would take that reference into consideration. It's just another tool for you to consider and
sure.
Use the information as you want to use it.
Thank you.
So then this process is not complete until you come back to the full commission with your later findings.
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
And I understood that it is a public meeting and Kirby's welcome to stay for the whole meeting, but she's opted after the interview portion is closed that she's going to leave for any additional discussion that we have, like she did the last time we met and discussed her kind of the seat of the position. Any other questions about the process?
Should I tell her to come down?
Yes.
Okay. See how fast she is.
Test number one.
How fast can
speed
you make it?
Speed of the elevator.
So who gets the first question, Ellen?
I was literally just thinking that, and I was going to defer to JJ to say how she wanted to, how you wanted to go, if you wanted to start, vote up with this one.
You're a meeting man.
Oh. Okay.
I saw that, JJ.
Then, Amani, I'm going to let you ask the first question, and we'll go this way. So that means, for you, LaTanya, you'll have question number three, and you'll go after Darcy.
Question one.
The one that's numbered one is really for Kirby, so you'll have question number four.
Okay, thank you.
And Madam Chair, you might want to give the candidate some introductory remarks, but I think the Ms. Mercer also has information to get to her before she gets asked the first question.
Okay,
so
I was going to review
just
the process, but I'll defer to Diane.
Yeah,
to
both of you.
I was really only going to talk about the 3 minutes, so if you want to cover that.
I wrote some notes to cover. If I miss anything, what are the odds? If I miss anything, let me fill them in.
Just so she has an overall, she knows nothing about it, so she knows how many questions are just overall, like she's going to be able to have a closing statement, just the framework. Mm-hmm.
Hi.
Hello. Hi. The
seat of honor. Hey,
Sophie.
Hi. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you for having me.
You're welcome. I'm going to tell you a little bit about the process to make sure that it makes sense. If you have any questions, let me know. And Diane's going to keep me on in case I miss anything important. So we have a list of questions for you, and we're going to go round robin with the questions and probably come back around halfway again. But before we start, you're going to have the opportunity to make opening remarks, which could be up to 3 minutes long. So any introductory remarks that you want to make, and then we'll get started with the questions. There's no time limit for the questions. You can make as long or as short as you want to with those questions, but you have 3 minutes for opening comments. And when we finish all of the formal questions, each commission member is going to have the opportunity to ask either one follow-up question or one new question of you. And once that's done, you'll have the opportunity to make 3 minutes worth of closing remarks. So 3 minutes to start, we have a little round, we go a little bit further than a round, maybe there's follow-up questions, and then you'll have closing remarks to make.
I just wanted to recommend to that really each question is designed to be no more than
exactly
3 minutes. And then we do have somebody on the phone.
Natanya's on the phone, so she's going to jump in with a question as we go around the room. And then I told the group, I think that you had said when all the questions are finished and you finish your closing remarks that you were going to excuse yourself like you did before, just out of deference to the conversation.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Sure.
Okay. You're on with your 3 minutes introductory remarks.
All right. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
If my voice quivers, it's because I'm nervous. It's a little different being in a more formal role before you all, so I'll try to calm it as I'm speaking, but thank you so much today for allowing me to share with you my passion for the city's ethics program and my excitement and vision for growing the program in the future. As some of you that have worked closely with me know, I'm a detail-oriented person, and I've made a pledge to myself that I'll keep it high level today, or at least attempt to do so. But if you have any questions about any of the information that I share with you today, please feel free to interrupt me and ask if that's in accordance with the procedure. I'm happy to provide more detail to you. My passion for the city's ethics program began in 2007 when I started working with the city as a member of the Ethics Commission. I absolutely loved working in the commission. It was one of the most inspiring and rewarding service activities that I've ever been a part of. I was completely drawn in by the valuable relationships that I established with those on the commission and of the important work of the commission in ensuring that our democratic processes work in the most transparent manner as possible for the betterment of our community and for our society. And I was also very much committed to achieving the independence of the commission and the city's ethics program that Ms. Miller spearheaded with great difficulty, I might add, at the time. If I'm fortunate enough to be chosen as the next director of the city with amazing shoes to fill, I would build on the very strong foundation that Carla has built over the last 20 plus years here in the city to accomplish the mission that I have for the program. And that is to fully integrate the ethical culture throughout the city business to increase the effectiveness of the program and to enrich the culture. How would I do that? By co-creating with employees and building the culture from the bottom up. There's a lot of talk about the importance of tone at the top, and that's really important. But the research in the ethics industry shows that the power lies in the employees' ownership of the program, of developing the values and getting the buy-in and shifting the culture. That's where the true power comes from. So I would work on co-creating with the employees on harnessing the power of ethics and decision-making, and was correspondingly trying to decrease the silos that exist in the city of the decentralized ethics and compliance functions that are spread throughout the different departments in the city. We saw the powerful example of this back in 2019 during the proposed sale of JEA and some of the transparency and conflict situations that were raised by both employees and citizens outside. The power of the ethics and compliance functions in the city being brought together by the great work and leadership of Ms. Miller really helped to protect the integrity of that process and to show to the citizens the importance and the power of ethics and how it can impact them directly in their daily lives. I've trained under Carla for the last 10 and a half plus years, both as a member of the Ethics Commission and as Deputy Director. And while working in the office, my role has increased from supporting Carla when I initially began to assisting in the day-to-day management of the office. Additionally, my duties have included becoming the main person in the city responsible for analyzing voting and prohibitive conflict issues, and also substantially performing a great portion of our trainings. And I also have harnessed valuable relationships with key city stakeholders. I'm really excited about the future of this program. I would love the opportunity to implement research-based national best practices to take this program to the next level and make it a national best program and to measure the effectiveness of the program. And lastly, I'm uniquely qualified because of my passion for ethics that I've had since elementary school when I was a safety patrol. I also was on the student conduct committee at the University of Florida and standards chair, so there's a lot of a theme of this in my life. I, of course, didn't know it at the time. My great vision that I have for the continuation of this program and to build upon the incredible success of Ms. Miller, my hands-on experience in the city, and also my love for helping people.
Thank you. In the coin toss, we decided Amani was going to get to ask the first question.
Madam Chair, just for procedural things, who's tracking time?
I'll be happy to do it. I was kind of watching the time here, and so we went about now for 4 minutes.
So it'll be you tracking time?
But I didn't think there was a rule about the time for the following questions. Just it's advised that she might take about 3 minutes, but she can take as long or short as she likes.
Okay, I just
want
to make
3 minutes on the first and 3 minutes on the last.
Okay, thank you. Just
thank you so much.
Can you tell us about your ideas, agenda, and vision for the Ethics Department outside of what you just talked about?
Yes, certainly. So one of the main issues that faces the Ethics Office, not just here in the city, but nationally as well, is the idea of, or the concern about, an ethics police. And that's where people see it as being a program of retribution or a gotcha, if you will, as opposed to being a proactive problem-solving program. And so my vision for the office is to change and shift that perspective by engaging with employees and city stakeholders to gain their trust and giving proactive advice and resolving some of the issues that might arise, which I've done so far for about 2,900 inquiries, and managing some of the processes in the office and streamlining them to make them efficient and to strengthen to leverage the strengths of the employees that work in the office.
What key challenges do you foresee at the office, and what course of action do you expect to take to rectify those challenges?
So the key challenges for the office is both in terms of the perception that I just shared with you, but also another key challenge to the office is the decentralization of the consolidated government functions and ethics and compliance. So our office has some of those functions, as you're aware. The commission has some of those functions. The IG's office has some of those functions, and the council auditor has some of those functions, and risk management, and employee services, and the Office of General Counsel. So there are at least 7 different departments that I can think of off the top of my head that have ownership of some of the various ethics and compliance functions that are necessary for a national best practice program. And so a challenge for the office is to try to decrease the decentralization of that silo and to increase cross-collaboration across all of those agencies and departments, such as by having a round table with those key stakeholders to meet quarterly or every biannually or whatever works for everyone to discuss emerging issues so they can harness the power of ethics.
Thank you. Next up we have on the phone, LaTanya.
Thank you. My question concerns the media. It has been written pretty extensively about the ethics office. So my question is, what is your plan for when it comes to dealing with the media?
So my plan for dealing with the media is to allow the commission to speak on the issues of ethics, which is generally how it's been done. The chair of the commission speaks on behalf of the commission on important roles and functions. Another role that deals with the media is where they might call for background information. So I could help and assist them in some background information in terms of telling them and educating them about the code, which I have done on a number of occasions with inquiries that we've gotten in the office. And lastly, another interaction that the office has with the media is through public records requests. And I've handled some of those and just making sure that they're responded to in a timely and complete manner.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I have the next question. Describe your experience with executive training, please.
So I was very fortunate to participate in the Harvard leadership course called Managing Yourself and Leading Others. And it was an immersive 2-day course on all kinds of things, personality characteristics, how to leverage relationships, leadership styles, the effectiveness of leadership, engaging and cross-collaboration. There were a whole host of topics, and I really found that to be an incredibly valuable experience because it helped to showcase for me my strengths, some of the areas where I could need improvement, but most importantly, my leadership style, which is collaborative and visionary and coaching and empathetic.
Thank you. JJ, I have the next question, and that question is, describe your professional connections to ethics organizations and how those connections provide value to you on your job.
So I am a member of the ECI, which is the Ethics and Compliance Initiative, and it's a conglomeration of various ethics agencies, and it's a professional network that runs across industries. And I have found that my participation in ECI over the course of my time in the office has exponentially provided valuable insight, not just into trends into the industry, but also into adoption of national best practices. So one of the things that the initiatives that the ECI undertook was they did a blue ribbon panel report on the characteristics and attributes of a national best ethics and compliance program. And then once they published that, they then had a roundtable group that convened to develop different maturity scales or ratings for those kinds of programs. So you could have from almost non-existent to, that was level number one, to number five, which is the best model practice that had all of the wonderful things of a program, not just a code of conduct or rules, but cross-collaboration, employee ownership of the rules and values, organizations that live the ethics values. They do risk management, mitigation, and identification. There's no retaliation. It's ethics are applied evenly across the organization. There's a whole bunch of characteristics of those. And so that has been an intense area of focus, both for ECI and in my learning in the office. We are in kind of an adaptive managing, which is like level 3 to 4. But I'm really excited about trying to achieve some of those on the level 5. So it's been very valuable to learn the national best practices.
Thanks for being here. Appreciate you. talk about this. I know this is a little different. Strong partnerships are key to a successful ethics program. Will you please tell us about your interactions, positive and negative, with other departments, your current employer here?
So building strong relationships is one of my key strengths from the Gallup strengths test that I took, but it's also something that's been incredibly important to me throughout my course of my personal and professional life. I have developed strong, very strong working relationships with several attorneys and staff in the OGC, working with them on various legal and ethical concerns, and I've seen that through the advice that they've given me or in them seeking out my advice on some of the issues that they've faced, and also coming to us more often with inquiries from when I first started. I have a close working relationship as well with the executive director and general counsel of the State Ethics Commission. I'm pretty sure I'm on his speed dial. I talk to him so often. In fact, last week I talked to him twice in one day about two separate voting conflict analysis and just making sure that I had a correct read on some things. Also, I have a close working relationship with the Office of Inspector General and Ms. Green and the DEOs, the Department Ethics Officers, and several key employees in the Council Auditor's Office and various agencies. I've been very fortunate. It's been one of my most favorite things about working for the city is developing those relationships.
Thank you. Mary Glenn? Hello. Describe your experience managing an office and what is your management approach?
So I have had experience in managing the ethics office and assisting Carla with that. That's been the primary thing in terms of actually managing the office. I actually have also had experience in managing others. When I was teaching at Florida Coastal, I had to manage, select, and train my teaching assistants and had to provide oversight and supervision of their work. And I also had to manage organizations that I served as president of, so the Young Lawyers Association for the Jacksonville Bar Association, and also for Hendricks PTA. But in terms of managing offices, my primary experience has been here assisting Carla in the ethics office. And my approach to that is leveraging the strengths of the employees to make sure that we are prioritizing work that needs to be done and assigning those tasks to the person that's best suited to handle them and that has the best capacity. And so I've instituted weekly office meetings with Sandy and Andrea to review a weekly a planner that we have that lists all the different functions and activities that are going on to make sure everything is being handled.
Thank you.
Can you tell us about a time when you made a bad decision? What was that decision, and how did you minimize the impact?
So I can tell you about a time. It was when I interviewed for my first job out of law school. I was interviewing for judicial clerkships, and I had an interview with a particular judge in the Southern District of Georgia. And about 2 or 3 weeks before the interview, he had mailed out some materials for me to review for the office, which I had reviewed. And then the weekend before I was interviewing, I actually had to fly home for a family event and then drive back up to Georgia for my interview, and I had forgotten that packet. And so when he called me in to interview me, he was a very tall, imposing man, so I went into his office, and I was a very young lawyer, not even a law graduate yet. I guess I wasn't a young lawyer, I was still a law student, and I was very nervous, and so he was asking me about things, and he asked me about the paper, and I, at the time, had no recollection of what he was referring to, so I said no, I had not received it. So he made a face that seemed to be that he was surprised by it. He got up and he went to his assistant and got the paper and brought it back to me, and I immediately recognized it when he handed it to me. And I didn't know what to do. I froze, and I didn't know how to handle it at the time, and so I didn't say anything. But as I was driving back to school, I reflected on that, and I didn't want his employee to be blamed or lambasted for my mistake and my error not understanding what he was asking. And so when I wrote my thank you letter for the interview, I admitted to him that I had come to discover when he handed me the paper what he was referring to, and it was the error of me and not recognizing it, and I didn't want her to be held accountable. And he said that was the only reason he hired me. But I was the honest person he ever met.
Okay, so he did hire me.
He did.
Thank you. So we're coming back to Brown. Is this an audience again?
What has been the most difficult situation you've had to manage, and what did you learn from that experience without disclosing too much information, of course?
So, probably one of the most difficult situations I had to manage was when I worked for an organization that valued money above their employees, above their customers, above their mission, above the public persona of things that they had purported to support. And there came a time during my work with the organization that some of the actions they, I came into some information that, that showed to me that some of their actions was in great conflict with my personal ethics. And so I quit the job without having a severance of a safety net and without having another job.
What did you learn from that experience?
I learned about the value of upholding your ethical standards and ideals, and of constantly assessing situations that you're on. And also, what I tried to learn from that and bring to this office is my goal is to establish an ethical culture here in the city so that city officials and employees don't experience that same negative culture that I've had. And I've shared that experience from time to time in new employee training. And I've been very surprised by the number of people that have nodded their heads that they've had the same or similar experience.
Thank you. Hypothetically, tell us how you would handle a situation where you began asking questions and got pushback from a high-ranking official.
So that can happen from time to time. And so I would remind them of the role of the office and neutrality, but also the role in the office and its duties of getting access to information. That was actually one of the code changes that was recently codified to clarify after the JEA sale, and try to encourage positively their response to the information that I'm asking and seeking, and showing the benefit of providing that response. Because if they didn't, and it was important to the function of the office or the commission, I would have to take it before the commission and take further steps.
Thank you. Latonya, you're up. Question number 12.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. If you would tell us about a time where you dealt with a complex legal matter and what your role was in handling that.
Thank you, Latonya, for the question. So one of the times that I dealt with a complex legal matter, I was asked to perform a conflict of interest analysis on a prohibitive conflict, which essentially says that somebody might have a private interest, a connection to a private interest is trying to do business with the city. For five different members of the opioid committee that were being appointed to the new opioid committee that city council was performing. And those, some of the members that were being appointed to that committee were actually service providers in opioid and had worked with the city in developing its opioid Project Save Lives program. And so they were fundamental. So their organizations actually were receiving funding, which sounds like a direct conflict and on the face of the state statute is a conflict. But it was rather complex. And as I got into the details of what actually was being performed in the Project Save Lives and what the city was providing, it was apparent to me that actually it didn't meet the legal element of them or their organization selling services to the city, because the city didn't have a legal obligation to provide it. So I did a lot of research into it, factual investigation, a lot of legal investigation, multiple phone conferences with the State Ethics Commission, and I wrote in to the State Ethics Commission an opinion request on behalf of those five members, had a successful resolution come back from the State Ethics Commission on all five.
Thank you.
Foreshadowing, I have the last question before we can all go around and either ask a new question or a follow-up. So my question is, describe to us the last project that you worked on that was transformational within the organization.
Oh, without question, the sale of JEA back in 2019. So that was a primary focus of the office and Ms. Miller, and there were a lot of fast-moving parts to that. That was like a 300-mile-an-hour train barreling down the track, and every day something new was popping up with transparency and sunshine and exemptions and public records and conflicts of interest. And she certainly took the lead on that, but I facilitated and assisted her in working on the conflict of interest memos for some of the initial evaluators that were appointed to evaluate the bids. And I relayed to her what I thought were the deficiencies and the information that was provided and the need for additional information before a true conflict analysis could be performed. And then we were in many meetings with the Office of General Counsel and JEA's legal counsel at the time on the phone with the State Ethics Commission, ferreting out some of these challenging conflicts, preventive conflicts, and conflicts and voting conflicts.
Thank you. Each commission member is going to have the option of asking one follow-up or one new question. Did you have a question in mind?
I have plenty, but people have continued across the room. I'm going to get myself together.
Okay.
Jacob?
I do have a question. I can make this a question. Can you describe, your familiarity with the process of selecting commission members, and then tell us if you are in agreement with that process or if you feel that it needs to be tweaked or changed.
Absolutely. So six of the members are chosen by various elected officials, and the process of the office typically has been for Ms. Miller to contact the elected official that had that appointment and to reach out to them to remind them of their upcoming vacancy. And if they requested some recommended names, she would reach out to some people and get some feelers from some community organizations and provide those names back to those appointed officials, and I think that that is a great process. The other three are appointed by the Ethics Commission, and when typically there's a new vacancy or somebody resigns their position because they're no longer capable of serving as a member, there'll be a publication of that position to various community organizations, and I created a list, I think, of 30-something community organizations, and I spearheaded that effort a number of times when the commission has done an external search like that and to hire other candidates. And it was the same process that was followed, as I recall, when I was on the commission. I think it served very well to increase the diversity on the commission in terms of experiences and perspectives and race or gender and a whole bunch of different important characteristics.
Thanks again for being here. My follow-up question is that I'm going to sort of summarize two of them that you answered and let you pick one to maybe expand on a little bit. And there were two answers that I just didn't think were quite as reflective as some of the others. One was the question about what you learned from the difficult situation, which you talked about your former employer. And just wanted to sort of focus on the kind of what did you learn from it. And the other being the situation where you got pushback on an ethics issue, which I know you faced a bunch from people around. And so pick one of those maybe and just expand a little bit.
Sure. So in the employment context, as the first one mentioned, what I learned was it's okay to admit if you make a mistake. There's actually power in doing that. And it's really important to take personal responsibility, which I very often try to do. And to ensure that the rights of everyone are protected, like in that case, it was the right or the employment opportunity of his judicial assistant. And that is one of my areas of improvement, is being nervous sometimes when I am not as prepared or as knowledgeable about an area. And I honestly answered the question at the time when he first asked me, because I wasn't clear about what he was referring to, and I should have been more assertive and asked him to clarify it.
Thank you.
I will follow up as well with answer you gave to the question I had. When you have your weekly office meetings and you're organizing your agenda for the week, for example, how do you figure out what needs to be a directive to your staff versus what can be within their discretion about how to handle it?
So directives are priority driven. They're based on the significance of the project to the office, the deadline for that, the number of people that might be involved in doing something, and then those that might be more strength-based or generally driven or areas of interest, maybe longer-standing projects. An example of that is the lobbyist registration system for the city is housed in both the ethics office and in the Office of General Counsel. And so Ms. Miller had worked with UNF to actually develop that program, which was wonderful, but when it came into the city, it's now managed on the back end by ITD, so it's got some technological bugs to it. And anytime anybody transitions out of city council, the staff, and they're the ones that approve the lobbyist registration issues and registrations, they will contact us to get login credentials, which is very inefficient. And so we're in the process of trying to retool that for efficiency sake and develop a manual for them. But that's something that is not as time pressing because it doesn't come up as often. And so that's more of a skills-based strength and capacity issue. So Sandy's working on that.
Thank you.
My question is somewhat related to the last one. You mentioned in response to the third question, what key challenges do you perceive for the office and what course of action do you expect to rectify them? You said there were seven different departments that have ownership or functions that I believe you said ought to be housed in some way under the guise of the ethics office, or ought to at least coordinate better with the ethics office, which is the same thing you were just talking about. Can you elaborate on that more and talk about how you do that?
Sure. So definitely, I'm not advocating for them to be housed under the ethics office. They're housed in these separate departments just by the nature of the structure of the consolidated government, and that's certainly not within the ethics office power to change that structure. But trying to increase communication and collaboration, one of the ways is through a roundtable of either like quarterly or biannually meeting to talk about emerging issues or continuing issues and how to best rectify those. Also getting their feedback and their participation in terms of trying to further embed the ethical culture through helping to develop risk assessments for maybe the various departments, leveraging the skills and the capabilities that each of them have in their experience. So an example that comes to mind is we were doing a training for public works managerial employees. And one of the reasons that training was requested was as a result of an investigation that the Inspector General had done. And so in preparation for that training, I wanted to make sure we covered what Public Works had asked us to cover, but I also wanted to make sure we hit the key areas of concern for the IG. So I called the Inspector General, Ms. Green, and I had a long, detailed conversation with her about what should we be targeting in the training, what were the issues, specific issues that you saw, and more in depth than was outlined in the report, how can we best manage and address those issues on the front end to make sure they don't happen again. So there are various ways of forms of communication, whether it's formalized or a roundtable committee or individually speaking one-on-one or bringing their skills to bear through the development of processes like focus groups or surveys or risk assessments or something.
Okay, thank you.
I have a follow-up.
Okay. Go ahead.
May I?
You may.
Thank you. Kirby, can you elaborate on your vision for the office in terms of staff? I know that it's pretty limited at this point, but knowing that there's budget constraints, how do you see the office in the next 5 or 10 years?
That's a great question. And so the vision that I have for the office and for the program in the next 5 years is a more robust program with exponential training and addressing inquiries and further embedding this culture and working with the department ethics officers to develop the employee ownership of the culture and focus groups. and really trying to get this buy-in where ethics is considered on the front end of the city business decisions. And so that would require additional resources, budgeting, permitting. And so one of the more immediate needs for the office, as Ms. Miller is transitioning out, is to try to get in another full-time person to handle the increased inquiries that we've had as a result of the innovative scenario-based training that we've been doing. We found that it's been fairly effective in increasing the number of inquiries that we've received in the office.
Thank you.
Do you have any say in the hiring of staff members as executive, or excuse me, as deputy director?
Carla does collaborate with me in the hiring of people, but ultimately, and by people I mean we've hired 3 administrative assistants since I've been in the office and 1 training and program coordinator, and she did ask for my input on those, but she ultimately made the decision.
Have you made any suggestions or taken any actions to address the lack of diversity in your staff?
Yes, so diversity is really important to me. And we have had, let me add to that for just by saying that I think diversity comes in many different forms. So it comes not just in terms of gender or generational experiences or race, but also in life experiences and perspectives and skills. And the Ethics and Compliance Institute actually recently released a study on the future of ethics and compliance professionals. And one of the key takeaways from that was the need to increase diversity of all ethics and compliance staffs, but not in just one factor or component or characteristic, but many of those that I just mentioned. But in terms of the specific diversity in the office, we have had an executive assistant that was African-American and chose to leave of her own volition. I worked very well with her. I still have a really good relationship with her. In fact, I recommended her. She sought out my recommendation, and I recommended her for another city position. We also had another executive assistant that was of Hispanic descent, and she, too, left voluntarily with her husband, got relocated. So diversity, I think, is really important, and I really look forward to working with the commission, if I'm lucky enough to be the next executive director, to figure out how we can really robustly implement that in the office.
And can you talk about the steps that you'll take for the diversity?
I think we voted that only one question per person was part of the process.
Did we vote for one question per person, or do we vote for one person keep going around to the W?
One question per person. So we've gone through all our questions and done our round robin. You have 3 minutes to finish the closing remarks.
Okay, thank you. I would love to be the next ethics director for this office and for this program. I am aware of and ready to rise to the challenge of the position. I'm aware of the incredibly immense shoes that have to be filled, and in some respects, there is no filling those shoes. Carla and I share some common characteristics of our passion and commitment and enthusiasm for this program, but we also have some important differences in our strengths and our skills and our perspectives that can help, I think, guide this program to the next level where I see it going. My family roots are in Jacksonville, and so I'm committed to the improvement of the ethics culture for the betterment not just of the employees and officials here, but for the entire community. As Robert Kennedy once said, some people see things as they are and ask why. I dream of things that have not been and ask why not. So I see a very robust ethics culture here in the city, one that's co-owned and created from the bottom up, that can help to change that tone at the top with focus on mid-level managers, employees, department ethics officers, ambassadors, and people, encouraging people, showing them the power of ethics, the harnessing the power of ethics in business decisions, and the return on investment that can actually make in reducing employee accidents and increasing morale and increasing engagement and empowerment by your employees up by 6 times. It would be my dream job to be the director, to be able to continue the passion that I have for this program. I love helping others, and particularly in the areas of ethics and building relationships of trust. And my diverse perspectives in the academic, governmental, and private settings, I think, really would help to harness and support that vision.
Could I suggest that maybe we take 5 minutes, and I'm sorry if I'm the only one, but I need just a couple minutes.